Hello, and welcome to today's episode in our How Do You Remote series. Joining us today is Dr. Renee Curry. She received her PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, with a focus on history and the history of science. She has led in the field of higher education for over 20 years and has been working from across the country for 12 years. She is what some would call a remote enthusiast. To get started, can you share with our listeners about how you see the remote work revolution?
I do see it as a revolution as a historian. You know, a revolution is a moment of great change, but also dangers. And so I'm so glad that you're doing this so that we can talk about what the opportunities are and as remote workers together to think about the challenges and to advocate for ourselves.
Having your historical perspective on the history of work is going to be very insightful. I'd like to hear more about the opportunities and dangers.
So in terms of opportunity, I think that there was a time when people mostly did work at home or whatever that was, right? Whether it was on the farm or, of course, there were merchants, traders, people who worked by moving, but many people worked within their own homes. And when the Industrial Revolution came, not only were we going to small workshops within our communities, but all of a sudden we're being pulled into these big institutions. And you had to adapt as a human being your whole life, in some cases your family. You had to also try to protect yourself so that you could still have a life and that your life could be livable. And I think that's something we can all agree on. It's been an issue, it's been a challenge, and we've also had some great successes, also some great failures. I see this as a similar moment. I think a lot of people do, but I'm more of an enthusiast about it because I like the idea of giving people the option to have their family and their home as more of a base once again, so that their priorities and their interests, they can be reincorporated into their lives. You know, they're not spending 2 hours on the road that they could be spending, talking with family, friends, reading, painting, you know, whatever it is, you know, to have a fuller practice of the self than just work and then taking care of whatever you have to take care of very quickly at home. So I do see that possibility. I do see some dangers where we can become more involved in, a more various life with our families. We can become more civically engaged in our own communities, have time to go to the school with our children or advocate in front of city council for things that we want. And I think that's something that we really need now. At the same time, making that transition, it would be wrong to ignore that this has caused some problems. For example, in the big cities, once COVID came and everybody was working at home, what happened to those businesses? Downtown, you know, like downtown San Francisco or downtown many places, right? Those people also built their lives in community with the workers who came in. And so I don't want to gloss over that. That's a hard hit and for their families and for all of us. So it's a challenge that we have to work out. At the same time, though, the idea of building up local communities, just the way we have from local farm to table, is there a way we can start to support people to build more businesses locally? And I'm thinking about the environmental impacts as well. So I'm a fan in the sense that I think a movement back to the local is a great thing. And it's not parochial. It's not isolated because we're engaging with each other from all over the world and can do that more often. I know teams who work really well across the world, leadership teams and otherwise, who have really understood how to innovate together, to have the voices heard. Because I know sometimes people worry, well, I'm not there. And if I'm not there, then I really can't negotiate or I really can't put my pulse on things. I can be ghosted. You know, people just are not paying attention to me or misreading or whatever. And again, that's another challenge. But I think that there are companies already who have blown by that challenge. They're already fine. And I think there are probably techniques that someone like you and your company can help those of us who are still in front of the challenge to use to overcome roadblocks like that. So yes, I think local is a great thing to do for our lives, for being able to have a fuller range of self and give our energies to the people in our lives. But I don't think it's a return to living in sort of a small, insulated way, because we have this fantastic tool. So there's all kinds of issues and ways that this moment is critical. And I feel like I would like to know more about who's doing what, talking about this, and what are the tools we can have to, as remote workers and leaders, to think about a new way of being productive together. And I'm a fan because I think this is maybe a good platform if we can navigate our way through these challenges.
And I love how you mentioned movement to local
Yeah.
to really preserve and enhance the self, but also adopting those new global perspectives because we're interacting with people cross-culturally that we normally wouldn't get to. So I'm loving that. So yeah, tell them about your unique perspective and your training in academia as a historian.
As a historian, whenever you're able to bring forward the more complex picture, it's always a benefit to everyone. First of all, simply because if people will learn the more complex picture, they might break the habit of oversimplifying, which we all seem to have now. Almost every conversation is oversimplified. Almost everything you hear on the news is oversimplified. And so I love history, you know, for that reason, seeing that, oh my gosh, all of this. And I think there are people doing that now, looking at all kinds of technologies that have developed recently, including the one we're using, and looking at the ramifications of them. So I've always been interested in that. I'm not sure why. I think I went into history of science partly because of there was sort of a debate at my college over money. It was in the early 80s when many colleges were struggling, especially small colleges, and there were decisions being made about the curriculum. And actually, this decision was about a master's English program. And I was one of the student reps. And the debate, the terms of the debate, it just bothered me that people were talking past each other, what was valuable and what was not valuable. I wasn't an English major, I was a history major, but having taken the lit classes and poetry, I just thought that my mind was so sharpened by working with those people. And I just loved that. And I met other historians. I just love their ethics, you know, the commitment, no matter what your personal and political association is. Of course, I have mine, everyone does. But when you go to the data or you go to read or think about something, it's an ethical commitment to allow yourself to see what's there, isn't it? And to develop a habit of loving complexity. So these are the things that drew me into that. And this debate was about which discipline was more valuable and would bring in more money and therefore should remain. That decision so many people have made and are still making. And because of that, I just learned about the two cultures, which was a thing then, you know, that were separate. There's left brain, right brain, and all this stuff that we've come up with since then. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. People should be trained in both and literate in both, and they should be able to see the value of both. The things that are not tangible have a value, just as things that are tangible have a value. And so that drew me into the history of science. I ended up loving teaching, and I also love reading. I love thinking about things. I love putting together materials for my students, lectures, although I don't like lecturing, but I love putting the lecture together. But teaching was super satisfying for a long time. And so that's what I did and what I ended up returning to.
What would you tell someone based on all of your experience seeing both on site and remote? What would you tell someone to prepare for the job as a student coming into it for the first time?
Well, I think what they need to do is do some research into the climate of the organization they're working for. I think that there are some places which are very casual and maybe don't expect the same signs of I'm working as others. Well, how you're dressed, at least from the waist up, your demeanor, paying attention, to figure out how much of your engagement is required in certain types of meetings, right? Some meetings are brainstorming meetings, and depending where you are in the hierarchy, it might be your job to present the meeting. You know, it depends, but there are some meetings, and I think it's good to be aware of this early on, where it's more informational or a demonstration of community from the top down. And I think it's really important that for you to figure out which meetings are like that, I do. And then to go ahead and be in that mode when you need to be. Make notes about ideas you have. It may not be the right place for you to bring them up. Make notes about it and then work with your smaller team on those kinds of notes. Wait for an opportunity maybe to talk about those things. So, you know, they used to call it the parking lot. So parking lot yourself, figure out the different kinds of meetings and where you fit in each. I like change. I like change, obviously. I think that what companies need to do, and I think the ones that thrive do this, they need to have a bottom up channel so that when people really are paying attention, are attentive, are engaged in the way that you want to have community, well, the reactions that they have for you somehow are harvested. You know, that somehow there's a way to contribute this. There's a time when they can speak and not just, I mean, really talk about what the situation is, what could be better. Now, I know that some people say, well, you don't want to do that because it encourages your employees to have some hope, you know, that their ideas might. But I've always thought that it's better for leadership to be more transparent about that. If something can't be implemented, well, at one of your meetings, explain this suggestion was brought up. This is why it's not going to work right now. This is why we have to focus on this. I think that for companies and leadership, the more they can share that, I mean, I understand their limitations, right? They need to kind of protect their brand and their data and things like that. So not everything can be shared. But they can say that. They can say, I can't share that with you at this time, but I see where you're going. It's maybe something we can do later. We can't right now because we're focused on another project. You know, it's important that you're telling me. And of course, at times, you know, an employee wants their leadership to show, oh, that's a good idea. You know, I hadn't thought about that. So I guess I have advice for people who are remote workers, but, you know, also advice for companies. And I don't think that all companies are at that point yet where they have figured out a mechanism because the teams can be more dispersed. So if you're going to work, maybe you can find out what is the flow chart? What is the org chart? Who are your people? Where you can have those kinds of discussions. And if they're not happening, make a suggestion that they happen with some regularity with at least a certain part of the team, not just for feedback, but for ideas, for both.
In many organizations I have seen where those ideas are sent up the chain or whatever mechanism they say is in place, but they're blocked by the decision makers that really need them and they never hear them. And I think
they don't
you're
hear
right.
Them. Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that would be such a an avenue for change that really affects the customer, the client, because it's the people that's on the ground doing it. I really love that.
It's an important part of culture, that feeling
yes.
of contributing. Most of us are fairly intelligent. Many of us are well-trained. So I think that's perhaps another challenge for those corporations and companies who have not yet completely embraced the online model and who do not yet completely have that kind of channel. I think it's something to work on and as a worker to gently suggest. or, you know, to look for a place like that. Because as I say, there are a lot of the most dynamic companies have that. You know, they have leadership who want you to brainstorm with the understanding that you're not in charge.
To be acknowledged of the contributions you do make without fear of any kind of any negative impact.
Exactly. Negative impacts, right? But also the sense of being isolated because you are physically. So you don't want that to be happening online. So
in career prep courses, many times in a lot of the curriculum I've seen across many universities, they'll talk about things such as how to run a meeting, how to be in a meeting, but they don't talk about the nuance of reading the meeting, knowing how to read the room of what kind of meeting. Are there contributions now? Or is it something that it is like top-down communication with people, but not that discussion, not that open discussion. And some people may not understand that there are differences. There are nuances in that to understand.
I think so. Yes. And I might've been one of them. So
no, I think we've all been one at one time or another, right? Because we've all, we didn't know, because sometimes you might be in an organization where they say, oh, this is one of those meetings where we want everyone to contribute, but they really don't.
I've they
been
really
in those
don't.
Meetings before. I mean, multiple organizations that have done that. So it's just, there's
well,
a lot to understand about the
don't
culture.
You think for a young person coming in that it's important for them to be warned, to watch for that? It would be great to have a list of things to watch for. So
yes, like
not,
real things to look for. Exactly.
Yes. I mean, you know, not that every expectation you have shall be satisfied, because that's unrealistic. And some people do come in that way. But also how long to wait, what patterns to look for, and then to strategize if you want to make a change. I think what is great about this moment, again, is that we have a range of companies who are using online technologies. And I think it's a good moment for people maybe who don't have a feedback mechanism to go ahead and put one in.
Yeah.
And for workers to encourage that to happen by asking about it.
An authentic feedback mechanism to know where the ideas go, what happens to it. That's a really good idea.
Well, unless you're, you know, at meetings in brick, you know, brick and mortar in place, and the experience for you is you just sit there at every meeting. You know, what is that like if you just go to these meetings and all you do is just sit there? What kind of culture does that create in a brick and mortar? So if the same thing is happening online as you're trying to create culture, but basically everybody is passive, I just don't see how the means match the goal.
Seen in multiple organizations that people have represented, not just in the podcast, but others I've talked to, that is the hardest thing, is to marry that culture they want, that perceived culture, with the actual experience of the organizational culture that employees have. What would a feedback mechanism look like? What do you think it should be comprised of to safeguard the employee and to get the ideas up? So what would something like that include?
I don't think it's that difficult. I think it's the expectation up top that there is this added necessity of leadership. If you want to have a certain culture, then I think a great way to do it would be to make sure there are, again, local cultures within your corporation or company where managers are trained to ask for the feedback and to be non-judgmental about the feedback. And I've known many managers who are really great at that. My expectation is that people will find that. I think that there's a roadblock between that level of the local manager and then having the opportunity to discuss some of the ideas that come through with the expectation that they will be seen above by someone. So I don't know if that means that becomes the part of the job of someone at a higher level. But I think if that position were visible and it was authentic, I think that would go a long way in online workplaces to create that sense of community, And the to take away the fear of speaking online, you know, where you can be recorded and all these different things, but take away that fear of reprisal that really does shut down feedback that might be needed and innovation. It's a balance.
Not having the fear of sharing something that may be a different way than we've always done it. So I can see it from the new person and even the experienced person, but there's always a fear of sharing, especially in the remote environment.
You know, the idea that it could be taken on and you can just be left isolated out of the whole process. I do think you're right, Tracy. That's a great insight that it is daunting. So how do you get people to feel like being online is the same, you know, as being in the room with someone? So you have those two employees and you have the manager, and everyone wants to feel comfortable giving their perspectives and feedback. Well, doesn't have something to do with how the manager is trained. And, you know, that they're managing people as well, and they know how to set expectations and they know how to be encouraging, but, you know, with as much transparency as possible, to be realistic, and you just get used to that. I do think the more the employee can figure out what their organization is like ahead of time, maybe just asking, partnering with someone who's more seasoned and asking them, how do you think the company likes to receive information? And is it this or is it that? And what are the mechanisms for ideas to go up?
Very practical. And you mentioned something that's key, training for leaders. And this is across industries. I'm seeing this, not just in education. I'm hearing it from various industries, that the employee, that contribution, that idea is acknowledged. That remote key is you feel like you're part of something if you can contribute, because everybody wants to contribute something, right? So that they're heard and they're understood. And then having it's gatekeeper skills. I think that's what the leader or the manager who is receiving that. It's gatekeeper. It's the gatekeeper role is making sure everyone's interacting and no one's left out. It's the gatekeeper skill. We've been missing. We solved the mystery of remote culture.
Yes. And I think, you know,
every industry.
I think it's true. I think it has a lot to do with productivity. Now people are saying you have to come back to work and be in the office. Maybe. But maybe you just really didn't have that kind of person or a person trained to create that environment online. Maybe that's why you think engagement needs to be higher. Maybe that's why people seem to be in isolation, because intellectually they are isolated and it doesn't need to be that way just because it's online. That's why I'm an enthusiast. I do think it's important to have somebody to follow up with those managers on those things who is also trained. And basically just has an appreciation for the creative work of people, no matter what their position in the company.
Let's think about it. Education. Okay. We've both been in education for over 10 years.
Yes.
Times a couple of decades. Okay. We know it. We know education. When we started, the position, and I hate to date myself, but the position of instructional designer was not a major. You did not major in that. That was not a field.
That's right.
You were a teacher. You went into education. You learned the same principles. But then as technology, as things changed, it was like, well, we're going to go not just face-to-face, but we're going to have an online learning system, whether you do it partially in class, whether you're a full online or whatever. And that's when that ID field started to come into focus. So the same thing with the gatekeepers, that could be a position in organizations now, term to make sure everyone's involved, to make sure everyone feels connected and as though they're being heard. Maybe that is a new position in this remote environment that is needed in companies. That's the missing key in all industries, because I know there's a company that's in Michigan. I was interviewing someone and they said, they want us to come back in the building, but the leader was saying, we are more productive remote. I have the metrics to show it, but the other leadership who wants to micromanage us, they want us to be on site because their job is not needed anymore. And it was like, wow.
Oh,
and so that's in Michigan. And it's like, and you're in California and I'm in Alabama. So coast to coast, I'm hearing people say, we are more productive remote we have the metrics. And then I love this person, because they said, maybe the micromanagers need to find another job. We don't need them anymore because we're adults and we're working. And it was like, that's brilliant. So maybe that is the answer, is a role to teach people how to, and it goes back to communication, right? How to make sure everyone feels heard. Mm-hmm. And we bring those ideas in, because we are a distributed workforce now.
I think so. And I think there were things that worked in a brick and mortar and for people on site that are great for building community and for having that talk in the hallway that managers say that they want. That's why they want people to come back. I'm with you. I think that there's another way besides pulling people back to this central location and all the gas and everything, the time that takes away from their from the ability to live a varied and full and civic minded life. I think you're absolutely right. Instead of doing that, why not really ask some questions, open-ended, honest, about how much those kinds of things work for people online? I think the answer is not very much, but that's just anecdotal. I appreciate the efforts, but I think that unless they're are people who are trained to be those gatekeepers that you mentioned, whose job it is to meet and have those kinds of brainstorming sessions from the lower level all the way up. I think, of course, you want people to come back in. But as you said, why not try this other way? I've always thought that this would work.
We're creating remote work. We are creating what the standard's going to be.
Let's say straight out that in academia, there are already academics who do this incredibly well, who manage people incredibly well, who are great at listening to, you know, your suggestions and really trying to figure out what to do with them.
They've been trained in
being with people.
Multiple perspectives. Yes, that's the that's what we have to bring into business.
Be receptive to people's ideas, because you want to encourage students to go ahead and speak and to show their ideas in their writing, whatever it is. So they are trained that way. And it's not a surprise to me that many of the people I've seen at that level are adept already. It's just what they do. I think that the kernel of it is, how do I facilitate a conversation that allows my employees to think critically and encourages them to do that? Because the option not doing that encourages them to be critical about you in their thinking.
That's across the industries.
There's nowhere for that feedback to go.
So that's what we're doing right now. We're creating the idea to further the field of remote. That's what the whole purpose of the podcast is that could help fix the culture question that everyone has an issue with. Everyone's asking that. How do we get culture to be communicated with remotes? How do we engage them? Let's have a role for that.
Yeah, I think you're such an innovator. I think you're right. If we're building this new way of living and working and with AI and everything else, I don't think going backward is the right step. I think instead, you're right, there's a certain position or type of training, and I'm not saying it's being an academic for sure, but
we know those skills are important. And those are skills, which means they can be learned. Yes.
They can be learned. Yes. Mm-hmm. And if the right infrastructure is in place to take the fruits of whatever this manager has learned to do and can do, then I think you have a healthy organization and people don't necessarily need to come into the office for there to be bonding and a sense of being valued, of not being cast adrift out there away from the heart of everything. What would such a position look like? What if we didn't just have those things that allow socializing, but those things that encourage critical thinking and dialogue? Community, you know, yes, it comes from the social things, but for remote people, no. And the solution isn't to force them to come in to have the social things. The solution may be to learn how to critically think together online, because that is satisfying. And I don't think I'm the only one who feels this way. Who doesn't like the opportunity to be positive, you know, and try to brainstorm how something can be done, or maybe a new avenue for revenue? You know, who doesn't like doing that? You know what? I'm going to leave this podcast and start doing more history of work.
We'll have you back. We'll do a follow-up. We know we've identified that that is a gap across industries. It's definitely a need. And that's the question. How do I engage with my remote people?
Oh, gosh, I couldn't agree with you more. You were a great advocate for this. I feel like you've said things that are the reasons why I say I'm an enthusiast. Yeah. I don't see it as a limiting platform. I just see that the institutions it's embedded in, it a lot depends on it. A lot depends on how they use it and the kinds of exchanges that they encourage. And a lot depends on employees learning the right questions to ask and the right behaviors to have at different times.
And we're talking about employees who understand the basics. We're talking about those who are fully engaged in work and they're like, yes, I want to contribute something. How do I do that? Because for those who need that remedial attention, that should not make our policies.
I see what you're saying.
Majority want to work. The majority want to contribute.
Yes. I think companies already know that you have to engage them, the ones who want to work, and you want to engage them in your culture and to be on your team. You know, you want that. And we all want to be a part of it. But it's just a moment in time, I think, where not enough people are yet knowledgeable or have yet implemented the procedures that allow for this kind of authentic exchange to happen online.
But it happens
with my students all the time. So it can. Yeah.
It's the same thing with workers in the department. If you've hired right, you've got those motivated fits in your department. Mm-hmm. And that's who we're talking about. We can create what remote work is going to be, the new mindset, new way of working. What does that look like? So, yeah.
Yes. And I think for many people, Tracy, it's going to be just what you said, right? That they do want more time. And I'm thinking of the more time coming from not having to commute, not having to buy pantyhose, you know, all of those things
exactly.
that work in an office entail.
But that pressure's
off. That time suck is gone. But for other people and in some industries, I think that, you know, the constant work and the high level of work, well, that's part and parcel of their industry. And maybe it has to be that way. You know what I mean? But I think that people can go in with the mentality of being able to pick what suits them. But we want all of those people to be able to contribute the feedback that they have in order to bind them to the company instead of thinking about that place.
That's really good. That's really good. Man, we've covered some things today. We mined gold today. I love it. Love it. Love it. What advice would you give maybe at the organization level or at the leader or the worker level? What advice would you give about remote work?
I have a persistent message. Instead of what are the social add-ons that may be used to work? What are the elements of work that people love? And just like you said, ask the question, what are the elements of work that people love? How do they want to be used? You know, how do they want to be addressed? And just consider whether or not your team might be more productive, even if you spend a little money, you know, have somebody listening to that. If you do that, consider whether or not that will create the culture that you would have created through other means before. And I guess it's not to the worker so much as to the management. Give
that's
this a
brilliant.
Chance. Don't walk backward yet. That's what I would
it.
Say.
That's it. Don't walk backward yet. Don't go back on premise yet. Don't give up on remote. I love it. Well, that is a solid way to end this amazing, I would say
that was
wisdom
fun.
Download from you. And thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for
Renee.
Having me. I just love to be around when you come up with your ideas.
Well, no, this is not the last we're going to hear from you. I know.
And needed. Okay.
We're building something
thank
together.
You,
so I appreciate your time. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to WorkforceRemote.org's podcast, where our goal is to help you continue to go remote and work on.